Evening. Hi. It's good to see you. My formal background here is the curtains of a motel room in Calais, Maine. Today I crossed the border back into the United States. And then discovered a beautiful, beautiful long trail along the river on this side. So kind of a strange feeling of walking the border. And on a beautiful, beautiful evening. And Earth Day comes this week, so the suggestion came to talk about that. And the koan that I found coming up right away, actually there were two, but I think I want to, well, I'll just mention one of them and then, but then I really want to dig into the other. The just mention one is a familiar one, a saying from Linji. The one that just says, if wherever you are, you take the role of host, then wherever you stand, that will be a true place. So I found myself feeling really interested in a slightly different way in that question about what's a role of host on Earth Day, you know? But the con that presented itself even more strongly, I want to really spend more time with. And then in conversation, we can come back to that Linji one or just let it, you know, sort of hang out as a base note through the conversation. So the other one is from the Book of Serenity, case four, in which the World Honored One and his companions, his community members are taking a walk. And the Buddha stops and points to the ground and says, here would be a good place to build a sanctuary, or in another translation, to build a monastery. And Indra appears, Indra, the emperor of the gods, and takes a blade of grass, plants it into the ground and says, the sanctuary is built. The monastery is complete. And the Buddha smiled. For one thing, I found myself just really touched by, if I put myself in the middle, if I put myself in the Buddha spot in this story, here would be a good place to build a sanctuary. Here in the middle of our dismay, in the middle of COVID, in the middle of exactly what we're in the middle of, whatever it might be to you at that moment. Here is a good place to build a sanctuary. And I love all the different meanings of sanctuary there. a sanctuary for all the beings, an inner sanctum. A monastery, a place of protected place of practice, a place of awakening, a place where people bring their children to grow up when they don't have any food to feed them. Here, have my kid make a monk out of them because I don't have any food, was sometimes the way the monasteries grew. I want to read you also that, you know, that the cases in the Book of Serenity often come with an introduction and a verse. And so I want to let you hear those. So I'll say the introduction, I'll say the case again, and then I'll say the verse. The introduction says, as soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. I'll read that line again. As soon as a single mote, a mote in the Indian cosmology was the tiniest conceivable particle. As soon as a mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. With a single horse and a single lance, the land is extended. Who is this person who can be master in any place? And meet the source in everything. Now I'll read that whole introduction together. As soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. With a single horse and a single lance, the land is extended. Who is this person who can be master in any place and meet the source in everything? So then the case again says, the Buddha, that the world-honored one was walking in community. He stopped and pointed to the ground. Here would be a good place to build a sanctuary. Indra, emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and said, "The sanctuary is built. The monastery is complete." The Buddha smiled. And here's the verse. The boundless spring on the 100 plants. Picking up what comes to hand, he uses it knowingly. The 16-foot tall golden body. A collection of virtuous qualities casually leads him by the hand into the red dust. The red dust is just the stuff of every day. Yeah. This stuff, your stuff, my stuff. Able to master, to be master in the dusts. From outside creation, a guest shows up. Everywhere life is sufficient in its way, no matter if one is not as clever as others. So I'll read that again. Verse. the boundless spring on the 100 plants. Picking up what comes to hand, he uses it knowingly. The 16-foot tall golden body, a collection of virtuous qualities, casually leads him by the hand into the red dust. Able to be master in the dust, from outside creation, a guest shows up. Everywhere, life is sufficient in its way, no matter if one is not as clever as others. So I thought I might kind of walk through these and share with you some reflections, and then I'll be eager to hear yours as well. So beginning with the introduction. As soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. That one kind of lit up for me in several different layers. And one is, as soon as a single mote of dust arises, every second, right? Every split second, here's something. You can't keep track of it all, you know? Oh, here's something. Here's something, here's something. A whole earth is contained therein. And so there's both a sense of workability, you know, like, oh, I can work with this, I can work with this, I can work with this. And there's also then sometimes a sense of being overwhelmed. What am I gonna work with, right? There's so much, you know, here is this crocus pushing up out of the ground. Here is this news story. Here is this leaky pipe underneath the sink, you know. Here's this. As soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. It's like, you know, picking up any piece of it and it all comes with. And the thing that seems most important to me in this moment about that is, it's so easy to, you know, we've talked sometimes about our habitual tendency to make ourselves or this moment wrong, right? It's like arguing with it pretty quickly. And this line seems to be offering an alternative. That even though it would be so easy to begin the massive argument with all of it, on the other hand, as soon as it is, the wonder of everything appears. As soon as one thing appears, the wonder of everything appears. And what if that's my starting place? What if that's the field of encouragement that's created by each thing every moment? What if I could allow myself to feel and be held by that field? The next line says, with a single horse and a single lance, the land is extended. You know, this one thing that I can do, this one thing that's in my hand, while I was in Nova Scotia, I was carrying clods of dirt, you know, picking up big clods of dirt with my gloves and plunking them in an old wheelbarrow with cracks and holes in it and carting them off to a pile, you know, and I was picking up the sticks from the little branches of a maple that had come down in a storm and stacking them because they are dry enough now to be stacked. And and I was really, really moved by the way that my son and his wife took the very not easy, so in some places boggy, in some places rocky, little piece of land that the house is on, that I own there, that they've been living in for a year, and planted an orchard. They just, you know, they just did it, not knowing very much, not knowing which ones were actually going to survive, not knowing how long they were going to be there. And now, in these last 2 weeks, the buds on the ones that they thought maybe had died, you know, the little plum start, the little cherry trees, the little hascap berry bushes that looked like they might not make it, are all buds are popping and leaves, little, you know, those little bits of leaves are showing up. And they didn't really know what they were doing, but they just Googled it, you know. They did their best and stuck them in the ground, and you know, some of them may not make it, but some of them are making it, you know. And suddenly there's new life there. Who is this person who can be master in any place and meet the source in everything? Who's that person? Well, duh, right? It's you. It's me. What other person is there? And how can we, and to be master in any place, there's your Linji, right? In a way, it's accepting the offer, you know? Each place where you are at every moment is the place where you can be at home. You're master of that place in some sense, not in the sense of, doesn't have to be in the sense of domination, but in the sense of workability. This is the place. This is the place. It's going to happen here. It happens here. It is happening here. I'm happening it here. There's that sense. Not in the sense of ego as it is, as much as I think in the sense of participation. Yeah. If I don't accept that offer, then does that mean I'm saying I'm not willing to work with this gift? I don't think I want to do that, you know? Life is short, shorter and shorter. And yet, the moment is not shorter and shorter. Each one is just here, right? You know? The baby wakes up and cries and I get to pick her up. You know, the news comes in and I get to find a response. My sister falls and breaks her hip. Oh, you know, each thing. The river, I find myself by a river and I start to walk on a path and it goes on and on. You know, suddenly I'm walking for an hour on the border of the United States and it turns out to be a riverbank. You know, who knew? And so who is this person who can be master in any place and meet the source in everything? Here would be a good place of your sanctuary. Of our sanctuary, of our shared sanctuary that we enjoy and offer. So then in the case, that very, very, it's one of the ones where the Buddhist teaching is in the doing, right? Is in that gesture. Here, points to the ground. Here would be a good place. Let's do it. It reminded me of that great thing that somebody told me about. What's his name? Dzongkhal Rinpoche over in Crestone, who, when they were looking at the possibility of building a big, extravagant, beautiful temple, and everybody was sitting around saying, "Teacher, that's going to be really, really hard to do. Do you realize how hard this is going to be to do? And how much resource, I mean, this is going to take a lot of money. It's going to take years. It's going to take a lot of people to build this kind of temple, teacher." And he just laughed and said, "Yes, it's..." This kind of has that feeling. Oh, it's going to be awfully difficult, right? We're going to be at each other's throats. We'll be constantly thinking we don't have the resources. Let's do it. And that just, to me, feels like, you know, the spirit of this. But although there's the simplicity to it, you know, maybe without that much yakking. But what about meeting our current situation that way? Yeah, let's do it. And Indra, in fact, emperor of the gods, just stuck that blade of grass in there and said, "It's done." And so that called up a number of things. But one of them was that a lot of the cons talk about being in the grass, getting lost in the grasses, right? You'll be like a ghost lost in, you know, it becomes a sort of metaphor for getting sort of entangled, right, in the details. And so this time meeting this, I thought, oh, that's exactly what Indra is saying, right? Here's your sanctuary already. You've got it. You entangled in the grasses. That's it. You thought you needed some other sanctuary? So there's that. And also there is the way that grasses are all over the world, and they hold the soil, right? They do this, brilliantly do this really important work. I doubt if they could call it work in their own grassy minds. And I watched an old film, I don't know whether any of you might have seen it, with Joe and Samara. It's called A Man of Arran. It's a 1934 Irish fictional documentary by Robert Flaherty, and filmed in the Arran Islands off the west coast of Ireland. And it's a representation of a way of life that actually was mostly lost by then already. But So it's really more of a visual poem than it is documentary, but it's really powerful. And one of the scenes, this little boy, like 12 years old, maybe 11, maybe 10. But anyway, somewhere in there, is sitting on the top of a cliff. I mean, way, way up there, directly above the sea. And he's caught, you've seen him a little earlier, catch crabs and stick them under his hat. So he's been walking around with these little scuttling crabs under his hat. And he pulls one out and attaches it to a line. And he, you know, dives like this with a weight on the end of it. And he has it all, what looks like a tangle next to him on the rock. But it's not a tangle. He knows what he's doing. And off it goes. And then pretty soon he sticks his foot out because he's using his foot to feel the tug. And pretty soon up comes this great big fish. But I mean, he has to go hauling up all of this line. And then in another scene, the whole family, the man, woman, and boy, having parked a little girl somewhere along the way, which was a little bit unclear and a little distressing to me. But anyway, little girl gets parked somewhere. But mom, dad, and the boy are heaving incredible heaps of seaweed up onto a high plateau in the rock. And then they're taking these baskets and they're going down into the cracks where there are some grasses and pulling out the bit of dirt that has managed to collect between in the cracks of these massive rocks and making a garden to grow potatoes, which is the, you know, fish and potatoes are what they're surviving on, what they live on. And the amount of labor and care and dedication that goes into making some soil so that something can grow, so that some potatoes can grow, was really, really moving. And then there's another part, but that part about just planting a blade of grass. Yeah, and we too are heaving heavy loads sometimes in our lives, maybe in a different way. But what loads are we willing, you know, that mote of dust? What am I willing to do against the odds right now in our world? To make a garden, to make enough soil for something to grow, for something sustaining to grow. Grass. So then, the verse. The boundless spring on the 100 plants. Picking up what comes to hand, he uses it knowingly. The 16-foot tall golden body. That's one of the repeated phrases describing the beauty of the Buddha, the beauty and power of the Buddha. The 16-foot tall golden body, a collection of virtuous qualities, casually leads him by the hand into the red dust. Able to be master in the dust from outside creation, guest shows up, this mythical Indra person, being everywhere. Life is sufficient in its way. No matter if one is not as clever as others. I just think, I love that this whole sort of mythical scene gets in the verse wrapped up in a way that addresses just exactly where we're likely to have gone with it, which is, well, that's them, you know, that's those magical beings of other times and places. And this just comes right back around to, you know, it's you, right? You just as clever as you need to be. Not a message that's easy for me to hear at this point in my life where I feel my powers diminishing. And yet, am I going to let that be my response to the boundless spring on the 100 plants? I'd rather not. I'd rather not think that that's going to be my response. I'm too old. I'm too weak. You know, my mind is shot. That's boring. You know, maybe true, but it's really boring. And I'll tell you, little Vivi doesn't buy it. Her response is just to, you know, stick her fingers in your mouth. She does not care how clever you are. So then it's been just, I can't encapsulate, you know, all that I've learned from my 2 weeks with those dear ones of mine. But one thing I'll tell you is Samara asked me, she was asking me about my life, and we were talking about our different generations, you know. And she said that, and she and Joe are both, she's like 38, Joe is 40, and they're, you know, they're old parents having this baby and having so much delight with her, and also the, you know, about to go back to Brooklyn and both have full-time jobs. But Samara was talking about how much her generation actually is really interested in mine, if we make a wide band around generation, all of us. And she asked me, what gives you hope? And it was really interesting to have her ask me that. You know, this week when it's going to be Earth Day. And I think on even another day, I have a hard time responding exactly to that, because I'm not sure I know what hope is, or what it is for me, or whether that's really the question for me. You know, watching, I mean, there are responses that come up, you know, watching this miraculous development of a 9-month-old being learning so many things just within the 2-week span that I'm there, and just being so amazing and gorgeous, and watching Samara and Joe finding their step-by-step kind of a path, you know, in a time that's much more complicated than when I was a young parent. And just the kindness of people, the painful facing of things for love, that path by the river, the woman, and I stopped in this little shop that was next to the duty-free liquor shop and the gas station, so that I could get some milk for breakfast. And there were these two clearly already drinking guys talking very loudly about their opinions about the news. And the woman at the counter was so, you knew that she probably heard conversations like that how many times a day in that little shop, you know, it's like in that little convenience shop. And there was something about the beauty of her response. There was a kind of lightness in it. You know, she was listening. I don't know how to describe it, but there was a feeling of openness there. And I realized that the word that comes up for me, rather than hope, is beloved. And that I have this kind of dumb love. And I mean dumb in both senses. It's like a non-discriminating kind of love somewhere, and also one that I can't express, dumb in that sense as well. And there it is, it's just there. And so then along came this poem that I'm going to read to you, and then I'll open it to conversation. We'll still have some time. A little time, sorry. But here's the poem. Hold on. Oh, where is the poem? Not that. Hold on, it might be behind. There it is. It's called Bobolink by Didi Jackson. In a meadow as wide as a wound, I thought to stop and study the lesser stitchworts, white flowers lacing up boot-level grasses, when I was scolded in song by a black and white bird whose wings sipped air, swallow-like, until he landed on the highest tip of Yellow Dock. Still singing his beautiful warning, the brown female with him in fear. The warning was real, the anniversary of my husband's suicide. What was the matter with life? Sometimes when wind blows, the meadow moves like an ocean. And on that day, I was in its wake. I mean, the day in the meadow. I mean, the day he died. This is not another suicide poem. This is a poem about a bird I wanted to know. And so I spent that evening looking up his feathers and flight. Spent most of the night searching for mating habits and how to describe the yellow nape of his neck like a bit of Gothic stained glass, or the warm brown females with a dark eyeline. How could I have known, like so many species, they too are endangered? God must be exhausted. Those who chose life, those who chose death. That day, I braided a few strips of timothy hay as I waited for the pair to move again, to lift from the field and what? Live? The dead can take a brother, a sister. Not really. The dead have no one. Here in this field, I worried the mowers like giant gorging mouths would soon begin again, and everything would be as it will. She fortunately made a little postscript that said that the hold on, I've got it here. That the University of Vermont has begun an incentive program to encourage New England farmers to delay the second cutting so birds have time to breed and raise their young. So that's what's happening tonight, and please just unmute yourselves, and let's see what you might be thinking. And you know, it is, Kelly, thank you that for that reminder that it is the easiest way to unmute yourself is just to press down the space bar. And while you're keep it down while you're talking. And then when you release it, you'll be muted again. That's the simplest deal. So, Alan, do you remember that? If you just press down your space bar, that will unmute you and you can talk while you hold it down.
Hi, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Do you suppose we're all moats?
Yeah. Yeah, all motes shining in the light.